You so very much. Again, as you're coming in, please like, share, invite somebody in. Definitely appreciate you guys' love and support with the podcast. Of course, you can always catch the podcast on Facebook. We keep the lives, the videos posted, so you can go back and listen to them. But we also have, you can get the podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple, you can get it on Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcast, Anchor. I mean, pretty much anywhere you can listen to a podcast, you can pull up Reflections and take a listen, or you can check out the website www.drgaryharveyjr.com and show your support there as well. But definitely appreciate the love and support. Before we jump into tonight's episode, I did want to point out a few things that are coming up. We have Summerfest here on July 10th. That's fast approaching, so if you haven't picked up your tickets for that, for July 10th here in Olean, go ahead and check that out. There is a link that's been shared on the Reflections page, so you can check out that information there. But Lloyd Banks will be here along with some other artists as well. Just want to encourage you to show your support for that. If you're here and in the area and can participate, definitely want to encourage you to do so. Also, I thought it was pretty interesting that Edward Waters College, down in Jacksonville there, down in Florida, was actually upgraded to a university this last week. So another historical black college and university. They upgraded from college to university, so definitely excited about that and for the individuals I know that attend there. So that was pretty exciting news. And then, of course, Bill Cosby, his conviction was overturned, and, you know, hey, got to get the jello. And so he is being released. So a lot of things happening in the news. But want to encourage you, of course, we're coming up on a holiday weekend as well with the 4th of July. Just want to encourage you to be safe with your family, friends and family, if you're out celebrating and participating with that. But we are going to jump into tonight's episode of Reflections. Of course, mirrors have three purposes: to tell you who you were, show you who you are, and help you become who you want to be. So we're going to take a minute tonight, look at the reflection, face the man in the mirror, and see if we can't become better than what we started tonight. So tonight we have author Vernon Robinson, author of A Change Is Gonna Come, and listen, author, Marine vet, among other accolades, and we'll let him get into those and discuss more of those tonight. But we have him on the show tonight, and definitely looking forward to the conversation. I hope you guys are too. But Mr. Robinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and I appreciate this opportunity.
Hey, it's definitely an opportunity for us. I mean, I appreciate it for you taking the time as well. And again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to try to keep up with some of the comments and try to be as interactive as possible. So if I'm looking down, that's what it is. I promise I'm not ignoring you, Vernon, if that's what I do. Why don't we start? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and, you know, kind of where you're at and what do you do, and we'll go from there.
Southeast Washington, D.C. It's a poor neighborhood, of course. Grew up in the projects. Didn't have the most in life. Tried to make the best of it, the best I could when I was younger. Got in a little bit of trouble. Enjoyed fighting. You know, I did, you know, most of the things that most people would do to try to protect themselves, you know, to project that image that would help you to survive. I didn't have a mother and father in my life. My grandmother was my only parent, and she did the best she could. Unfortunately, there was some alcoholism in the family. There was some physical, verbal abuse in the family, and you know, it made me tough skin. It made me kind of just say things out of my mouth without thinking about it first, because, you know, it was just things that I was used to hearing saying, so it never really bothered me. So you know, I was acclimatized to just saying some of the rudest things, and people would say, wow, you know, can't believe he just said that, and I'm sitting there like, you know, what did I say, you know? But as I got older, you know, I got to a point where I started idolizing, you know, Mike Tyson was around my age. I think he's about 4 or 5 years older than me. So he was a big image that I wanted to mimic, and so as I got older, I got into more and more fights. I got to the point where I gave myself a persona, and then, you know, the inevitable happened. My grandmother passed away, and that threw me off quite a bit. Eventually, I was kicked out of the projects. I had no place to go. I had to lean on my mother and my father, and neither one of them would take me in. So one of my cousins, I call her my mom, she took me under her wing. She basically got me a place, and I had my senior year. I was in my senior year, and she told me basically, you know, you mess this up, you're done. So from that point on, you know, I decided, you know what, I'm going to join the Marine Corps. I figured, and no shots at the Army, but I wanted to go into a military branch that was going to be able to handle me. I had already known that I was a handful. I knew that regardless of where I went, who I talked to, I was going to fight back, buck back.
So you were Hollywood?
Yeah. I was Paris Island. So I went into boot camp. I did my thing, and I adjusted well in the Marine Corps. I had some hiccups, but I adjusted well. And by the time I got out, I was one of the better decorated Marines in our unit. And I deployed all over the United States. Went over to Okinawa, Japan. I've been to Busan, Korea, which is now Busan, Korea. I did Somalia, Africa. Actually, when we left Somalia, 2 or 3 weeks after that is when the Black Hawk Down incident happened. And shortly after that, I made my way up to this area. I ended up making my way up here via a woman. We met writing letters, believe it or not. And I always tell this story. You know, she wrote me a letter, and actually it was my boot camp buddy. His mom was writing me, and she said she was going to have someone write me. And I was like, oh, God, no. You know, I've seen some of the women up there. I don't want anyone to write me. And she wrote me, and I read the letter, and, you know, I wrote her back, and I was like, you know, I'm not interested. You know, I got a girlfriend, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anything to try to dismiss it. And then, of course, when I sent out that letter, her letter came back in the cross mail, and it had a picture attached. And when I opened up that envelope and I saw that picture, I was like, oh, when can we meet? I'm available, you know, anything I could to try to negate that last letter, you know. And let's see, we wrote for 3 years, and I got out of Marine Corps, and we got engaged, and with September will be 27 years we've been together.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
So, thank you. So yeah, that's the story of my life. You know, it started out bad, and things turned out good. Worked for two companies since I got out of the Marine Corps. I worked for Henkel Loctite, worked there for 13 years as a production supervisor, and then they outsourced the company. So I started looking for more work. I thought I was going to leave the area, but I ended up getting lucky and getting with National Grid.
Okay.
And I've been working there ever since. I was just recently, I wanted to shy away from any of the politics, but I was recently put on as, I wasn't voted on, but I can't think of the term right now.
Appointed.
But I became the alderman of Ward 6 in Olean, New York, so I'm the first African-American alderman appointed in the city of Olean. So I'm proud of that. And I stay humble to that. I'm a pretty humble guy anyway, but, you know, that there's just another accolade that I didn't intend on. You know, there was a call from the community, and I answered, and I plan on holding on that position as long as I can. So,
outstanding. Well, we'll stay away from the politic aspect, but congratulations on that.
Yeah.
You know, being the first, you definitely have an opportunity to set the bar and, you know, set the standard. So that's awesome there. And happy belated birthday. We'll forgive you for deciding to go to the Marine Corps, though. We'll forgive you. what was your MOS in the Marine Corps?
I was 1171.
Which in the Marine Corps is?
They call it basic hygiene equipment operator. That's okay. The technical name of it. So you go to engineer school, and in the Marine Corps, first off, everyone's a rifleman. Mm-hmm. Everyone's a basic rifleman. And you're assigned your MOS, whether you signed up for it or whether it's given to you. I went an open contract, so I was provided mine according to my GT score. So they made me an engineer. So you go to engineering school and you do your MOS, which mine was water purification. So when I went in, I did that in schooling. But once I got out into the field, once you get out into your duty station, you end up with a utilities platoon or a maintenance platoon or whomever. And I did a little bit of water, electrical, refrigeration. And then because I was in the maintenance, my first unit, we ended up doing a whole lot of heavy equipment, a lot of motor T.
Okay.
We got to work with some of the combat engineers that do a lot of the demo. So you dabble into a little bit of everything. And that's where that whole MacGyver concept comes in, where, you do all of these trades, but you're the master of none.
Right, gotcha.
It just makes you a handy person, mm-hmm. And I actually talked about a few of those. I brought a few stories into my book where mm-hmm. I talked about those things, so.
Yeah, it's definitely, I've definitely enjoyed it. I haven't quite finished it yet. I'm in the Somalia portion of it is where I got, and so I'm enjoying it so far. I'm kind of curious how that plays out, and you can't see, there you go, you can kind of see it, well, it's behind me, as far as the picture of the cover is behind me, but I'm enjoying it. My son burnt through the first two chapters the first night he picked up the book, so he's reading it right along with me. We're kind of trading back and forth, so it's been pretty cool. Your time in the Marine Corps, would you say that it definitely you said that you kind of described it as a transition period for you. It was kind of like make it or break it, and that was like where you threw all your lots, was the Marine Corps. Any regrets at all? Like, some people get out of service and they don't have a whole lot of good things to say about their time in service. And then others, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to them.
Right. I look back, I don't regret anything. If anything, if I have any regrets, I regret not staying in longer. But the fact was, I had deployed so much when I was in those first 4 years.
Mm.
And when I got back from Somalia to try to get home to see Michelle, it was difficult. I had to do a whole lot of, wheeling and dealing and trying to make promises and just to try to get a day off,
Mm.
And I hadn't burned any of my time. I still had 2.5 years worth of time, because you had 30 days a year.
Mm.
And so I ended up actually taking terminal leave and leaving, getting out. I think it was in July, August, I got out, and I didn't actually get out physically out of the Marine Corps until October. But it was a transition for me. It was difficult, I'm not gonna lie. It's hard for you to carry yourself to where you get in fights and you have this persona where you don't let anyone disrespect you.
Right.
And I preached being respectful, and then turn around and you get into boot camp and you have some guy, just in your face spitting, breath smells like onions, and they're telling you to do this and do that. And you're reluctant, you're looking at them like, who the hell are you,
Right.
And they show you real quick who they are, but, it was a transition, and I was able to do it. And I got a title that not a lot of people can say they have. I know Riddick Bowe, heavyweight champion. Some people probably remember him, some don't. When he left boxing, he went to Paris Island, where I went, to try to become a Marine. Didn't work out.
Right.
So that tells me that I could probably take Riddick Bowe. So it is what it is. So that boot camp training is tough, is difficult. The mindset that they put you in to try to help you, you can use it later in life. The whole entire aspect of how you carry yourself, the promptness, the discipline, the whole thing, that's carried with me since I've gotten out, and I take pride in it,
That's awesome. That's outstanding. I know, you know, I'm excited for, you know, my son to go, and but I have the, you know, because I've served and because I was in Iraq, I have a little different perspective than most parents. It's not just, oh my God, my baby's in the military. It's like, I know what could be down the road, you know, type of thing, but really proud that he's made the decision. And, you know, that's awesome. And I'm really curious to see the, like you're talking about that transition and how they, you know, shift and break you down. And I know being in the Army, that's one thing. Marine Corps, that's another thing. You know, and I can speak for the Army. I can only speak for the Marine Corps from the outside. I have a lot of relatives and friends and family and, you know, that have served. But I'm interesting to see the transition that he's going to make, you know, and because I know he's not going to be the same kid when he comes back. You know, he's just not, you know, on any level. He's not going to be the same. But so at what point did you decide, let me write this book?
So, you know, all through life, I've always been, despite the scowl that always, you know, I always had this look on my face, you know, like I'm upset or whatever, but I always blamed it on the sun being in my eyes. I've always been a jokey person. I've always been the type that will just sit back and I'd love to laugh, you know. But I was always a storyteller, and I'd always tell the kids stories. You know, I'd have an epiphany here or there, and I'll start talking about something that I remember. And one day I decided to write down the story from Okinawa. I'll just say that.
Okay.
And when I wrote that story, I started having all of the memories of everything that happened. And I was like, you know, I need to start writing this stuff down. So then I started, the second story that I wrote was about the circle on Condon Terrace where I was born and raised. And I wrote about some details there. And then next thing you know, I would wake up, you know, in the middle of the night or something, and I would jot down in my phone in the notes and just write down a couple of things. Or I'd have a pad somewhere and I would just write down. Next thing you know, I had all of these writings of little notes of remember to do this, remember to write about this, remember to talk about this, and everything just came back, and it was like it was coming back so quick and so fast that sometimes I would forget what I was even going to talk about. It was like, oh, I forgot the story on blah blah blah, you know, what was it? I can't remember, you know. So, you know, there was things that I forgot about that I remembered afterwards, and I was like, oh, I wish I would have put that in the book because that could have been helpful. But when I started writing it, it was more or less a memoir, you know, to memory of my memories, you know, and to shed some light on things. And then I started noticing the trend that in the book that you know, everywhere where there was something bad that happened, something good eventually came as a final product.
Okay.
And you know, growing up with my grandmother, you know, she was a big, you know, Motown lady. You know, she was old, very much old school, North Carolina woman. You know, she was the slave of a slave of a slave. So she had a lot of the tendencies. And during her roughness in raising me, you know, her tender side, she would always play this music and sing while she drank. And, you know, Sam Cooke was one of those cats. And, you know, that's where a change is going to come, amen, you know, because that was basically, oh my goodness, that's what this book is. It highlights that regardless of what happens in life, a change is going to come. And that's actually why I picked that cover, that some people can see it, some people don't. It's a transition of that's not me, that's a model. But that's it's a transition of a street guy. On the lower half, he's a street guy, you know, in his jeans and his tee, got his sleeve tats and everything, which, by the way, was not allowed when I was in, so that's why that was huge. And then it transitions into a squared away, straight up and down, you know, chiseled chin Marine, and that was my transition of a change is going to come to show that, you know, despite all of the obstacles that I had, despite all of the things that I had to fight through, despite the numerous times that I've almost died, I actually pulled through and made something out of my life and was able to become a role model. So, and that's basically why I went on and published it. And I figured, hey, if someone can read it and they say, hey, this has made a change in my life, or this has affected me, or I can correlate to this, then it's done its job, I've never really worried about sales. It was more about getting the message out, and that's what that is.
Right. Well, I know definitely from what I've read, I know it's impactful, and I know since meeting you and your wife, Michelle, that I've you've definitely had an impact on my life already in the short amount of time that I've known you. And so, I mean, I appreciate the candor that's in the book. You know, those of you that are watching, I definitely want to encourage you, because they're very much so transparent from what I've read at this point. Like I said, I'm not done with it yet. Excuse me. But while you were writing the book, going through the process, putting the not just ideas, I liked how when you started the book, and I'm going to paraphrase, obviously, I can't quite recall, but you know, in the initial foreword, the preface of the book, you talk about the concept of an autobiography, and that you were, I believe it was in school, and it was an autobiography of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yep.
And, you know, the fact that, you know, that the concept of an autobiography, you know, intrigued you, I thought was very interesting in the approach, because it's one thing to sit down and put ideas on paper, put a concept on paper. It's another thing to put your life on paper.
Right.
And so as you're going through that process and you're putting your life on paper and you're allowing people access to what most people don't share with the general public, you know, those aspects of your life, what was one of the most surprising things or, you know, unexpected things you encountered while going through this process of writing and publishing this book?
You know, just from the book itself, when I wrote about some of the earlier stages of my life, and some of the things that I, you know, regretfully have done, you know, when I was younger, you know, and I mentioned in the book, you know, this book is going to make you cry, it's going to make you love me, it's going to make you hate me. You know, there's so many emotions that are going to come with you reading this book. And one of the biggest things that came out of it was when I wrote about those earlier things in my life, I knew I was going to get judged.
Okay.
I knew that people would read it, and I'm just going to say, you know, for the people that are in this region that I live in now,
mm-hmm.
that only knows me as the person that I am here, mm-hmm. talking to you, they're going to be shocked. They're going to be in complete shock when they read how I was and the things that I've done. But then, you know, in comparison, if someone from the city read it, you know, then they would probably read it, and this is just speculation, but I'm going to say that they would read it and they would go, oh, this is me.
Yeah.
Or, oh, this is so-and-so down the street. I can relate to this, you know, and they're going to be consumed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just knowing those things, you know, I was kind of hesitant with some things. You know, I've talked about a lot in the book, and there's to be honest, there's some things that I just didn't put in there,
mm-hmm.
because I felt like I would be judged, you know, harshly.
Right.
You know, but I wanted to be able to tell the story, not filter it too much, but and I mentioned it there, it is unfiltered. It is unfiltered. It's unedited. It's raw. And I just talk, or basically I just type. And I am telling you how it is, how I feel, what I'm thinking, and all of the emotions that went with it. And I think that made me vulnerable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but how else would you get the point across unless you're vulnerable? You
right.
know, you have to be able to tell that story and to bring people in and help them to understand, you know, what you're saying, you know. So I felt like that was probably the biggest thing for me, is being vulnerable and getting that message out there.
I think oftentimes people forget themselves. They have a past. You know, me being as involved in the church as I am, one thing that I try to stress is that, you know, that we don't forget where we came from. You know, it's like we were afforded this grace and this forgiveness and these new opportunities when we decided to, you know, start going to church and, you know, be, you know, change our life and, you know, take that spiritual walk and that spiritual journey. But now we have other people coming in, and all of a sudden we forget that we have a past, you know,
right.
and you know, are upset that this person isn't the cookie cutter picture that we expect them to be. And that's one
right.
thing that in reading this that I appreciated, because, like you said, people that just know you, you know, here, like myself, I don't want to say that I was shocked as I was reading through it, but there was a little more of a, that's a real person.
Mm-hmm.
you know, type of thing for me. But that's also based on what I've experienced through my life as well. Like you said, people from other areas will read it and be like, oh, that's similar to me, or that's similar to somebody I know, or, you know, there's a realness and there's a relatability to it. And I think, you know, being able to acknowledge our past is huge in becoming who we're going to be. You know, I think a lot of times we get lost in our own personal journeys because we don't want to acknowledge these negative aspects or these, you know, potholes that we hit along the way and that type of thing. And try to act as if that's not who I am. No, that was who I was, you know, and being able to transition to that. So I appreciated it. You know, like I said, the candor that was there, most definitely. You know, and I think it is helpful and needed. You know, now, what would you say through your life, your time in the Marine Corps, your time up here prior to, what would one of the hardest lessons you've learned been?
Well, I can tell you right now, the hardest lesson I learned is it's going to circle around the time frame where my grandmother had passed.
Okay.
That part of the book was difficult to write. You know, I feel fine right now, but in the past, I've talked about this sometimes in the past when I was guest speaking and literally choked up while in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But there was so much pain put into that writing, and there was so much anger that I had for myself for things that I had done, and just the regret that came with it, you know. And it was hard. It was hard to write it. You know, it literally took a lot out of me, and it was somewhat therapeutic. You know, it was to a point where I couldn't believe that as I was recollecting everything that had happened, and I was going through that, it affected me a lot, and I tried to put it all into words to where it would be easy for someone to comprehend and understand and give as much detail so that you can feel the pain that I was feeling. And just getting that out there, you know, I felt better about it after I was all done with it, but it was definitely difficult. And then I guess the next part would be, you know, just moving up here and making that transition. You know, even though I had been, you know, culture shocked when I went to Japan, and you know, there weren't many African Americans in Japan except the people that were in the military. So, you know, you're in the States and you're used to seeing, you know, different races, but when I went to Japan, the majority were Asian, and now the minorities were white, and then African Americans were the super minority.
Okay.
So that was a hard transition for me, and you know, when I moved up to this area, you know, it was pretty much the same thing, you know. And I try to explain this all the time, you know, growing up in Washington D.C., you're talking about a 90% plus African American, you know. So then when I came up here, you know, and I just recently learned with Olean being 10,008 people and 10,800. And roughly the African American community is roughly 700. It's
right.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, that's super minority. So yeah, that was a hard transition for me. It took a lot for me to adjust just dialing, you know. Mm-hmm. When I would talk to someone with the Ebonics, the shortening of words, you know, the way I was used to talking, you know, and then coming up here and then me talking to someone and then they didn't understand what I was saying. I was like, am I not speaking English? Well, I am, but it's broken English, you know. It was just what I was used to doing, you know. So now I have to pronunciate everything and I say all of my words, you know, completely and precisely so that everyone can understand me. And then, you know, then I get my message across. So
yeah, it's definitely, you know, I can imagine the transition, you know, going from, you know, that area to this region. And, you know, I know myself, I've been blessed. I've been able to travel a lot and be a lot of different places. And I tend to gravitate towards what most people consider minority communities, those are the communities I tend to gravitate towards. And it's just there's a completely different atmosphere, and it's actually a more positive atmosphere, honestly, like as far as people are concerned, for me. That's been my experience. It's actually, you know, more accepting than what I've experienced in this region, just in general. So I can definitely imagine that transition being difficult. What would, if you could say your greatest success to this day, what would it be at this point?
Oh, that's an easy one. Okay. Wife and kids.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Pride and joy. You know, I can honestly say, that, you know, granted, I went through Marine Corps training. When I got out, I still had some fine tuning that I needed taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
The wife took care of those things, you know. She, no lie, you know, she was there to let me know when I was doing wrong, when I was saying wrong things wrong. She'd always, you know, put me in my place, you know, let me know, you know, you might be 200-something plus pounds, but she's 100-something pounds. She's like a chihuahua in my ear, you know, and a pit bull, you know. So, but yeah. You know, and I appreciate her, and I love her to death. And, you know, with that, we had two beautiful kids, you know, and they're both grown now. One's birthday, Joshua, will be 26, right? 26? 26 July 3rd. And our daughter, she'll be 24 in October. So they're both successful. They're both living out in Arizona. They're both doing well. We received nothing but compliments about them, their rapport, how they carry themselves, and it's a reflection of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
definitely.
And we definitely, you know, you're as a parent, mm-hmm. you know, you're happy to hear those things. So, I say that's my greatest accomplishment. You know, of all the things that I did through the military, with the writing the book and becoming the first African American alderman, you know, my wife and kids are number one there.
So, contrastly, what would be your greatest failure?
Greatest failure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always say there's an issue when you can't identify a failure, because that means you got some more work to do. You know, I failed at a lot of things, and I've tried to make the most of them. I've never really sat and thought about any that really hindered me from doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been a goal setter. I try my best to do what I can. Failure. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Well, you know, the reason I asked, I tend to ask everybody that question, because I have a different view of failure. For me, failure is a launching pad. It's that loss is an opportunity to turn it into a lesson. So in my mind, honestly, when you're like, oh, I can't really identify my greatest failure, that's not a bad thing to me. That means you learn from the things that you messed up on. You know, that's how I look at it. But that's why I ask people that, because there's, you know, I think that there's a thought process behind that word that we tend to, it just carries negative connotations. But you can't have success without failure. You know,
right. And I think about all the things that I've done in my life that were, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, and they didn't work out the way I wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I considered those, you know, life lessons. You know, I learned from my mistakes. I like to say I learned from my mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I know even when we had foster kids, I used to always tell them we have to do things perfect. And I distinctly really remember one of our foster daughters, she would say, but Dad, no one's perfect. And I understand that, but we have to get that mentality. We have to try to be perfect so that we can live our lives and try to avoid the heartache. You're mm-hmm. going to have the heartache, but there's ways of trying to avoid it just by doing things by perfection. You know, in my eyes, that's the way I see it.
Right.
So, everything that I've failed at, I've learned a lesson and I was able to turn around. So for me, if I learn something from it, it's not really a failure. You know, so.
Right.
That could be just the Marine Corps thing, you know.
You know, I had a gentleman that I used to work for in Florida. He used to tell us all the time that, you know, you need to be shooting for perfection. And it's like, well, yeah, nobody's perfect, you know, just like your daughter was saying. And he's like, you're right. No, you know, nobody's perfect. But if you shoot for perfection and miss it, you're still really good. You know, you're still close. You're still, you know, moving in the right direction. You know, and you know, one of the quotes that stuck with me since I've heard it, you know, I was in high school, I think, the first time I heard it. But a man that attains mastery of an art reveals it in his every action. And you can't attain mastery of something until you've gone through that trial and error and those failures,
right,
those lessons,
right,
you know, till you get to that point. So now, do you have yourself, do you have a favorite section of your book? You have a favorite chapter? You have a favorite, you know, portion of it?
You know, there's quite a few in there. You know, it's mostly the ones where I get canny and try to make laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try not to talk about those things because I want people to actually go and read the book.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, there is a part in there where I tell the story about a friend of mine and I. We were young, really, really young, and we went to go steal from the store, and we literally had the little Mission Impossible music going, you know, the whole time we were doing that thing there. And yeah, he got caught. I didn't. But okay. Another lesson learned, you know. And the reason why that was so memorable was because that was the first time, you know, that I had stolen something. So it was, you know, memorable. But, I won't go into any more detail there. But
right.
Yeah, you just imagine two little ghetto kids running through the store and just, you know, done.
Your own theme music, walking around like Shaft.
Yeah.
But okay. All right. Very cool. Now, do you have any suggestions or advice for someone who they want to pick up a pen but they're afraid of the process?
Yeah. You know, the process. Not gonna lie, it is one to be afraid of. It is a lengthy process. I am self-published. I did not go the traditional publishing route. So with that being self-published, you're coming out of your pocket with everything. So you have to be prepared to spend, you know, $2,000-$3,000 just to get it going. And you find a publisher that's willing to publish your book for you. And then be smart about your contract. You definitely got to be smart about it. Read your contract. It's not a get-rich scheme. So if you're looking to write a book to get rich, you have to think about this. You need to write multiple series books. If you're looking to get rich off of one book, not going to happen. You know, I take that back. It can happen. You know, you have bestseller. You know, I can say when mine was first came out, the best it got was in the 8,000s, I think it was, and I felt pretty accomplished with that, considering at the time I think there was 17 or 40 something million books out there, and I got down in that such low number, and I was impressed with that. But that was with word of mouth. I did not pay for advertising. I did not pay for any of the other things that you know, you would do traditionally to advertise your book.
Okay.
It was pretty much I got it going. I got it on Amazon. And from there, I created a Facebook page, and I just started sharing it. And it's done pretty well. You know, I've been impressed with it. And royalties, you know, they hit or miss, but they come for the rest of my life. And on to my next generation, they'll go on too. So it's something to consider. When it comes to actually writing it, I really encourage, you know, I was a big computer nerd when I was younger.
Okay.
Really did love computers. How I got into the English language is beyond me, but I gravitated toward it, and it helped a lot. I spent a lot of time writing. You know, we can always say that 3 years writing, my wife prepped me, you know, but I wrote numerous things, and I had to put them all in order and add more to it. Actually, the book had to get chopped down. I think I was upwards around 400 or 500 pages, and I had to chop it down. I think it's around 297 or close to 300 now. So I had to chop quite a few make stories out of there.
Okay.
But yeah, I encourage it. You know, if that's something you want to do, whether it be for you or for your family, or if you are interested in getting it published, you know, for the general viewing, you know, I would do it. You know, it was an accomplishment. I take a lot of pride in it, and I feel blessed.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, throughout us talking, you've mentioned a couple people and a few individuals that have been some level of inspiration to you. But if you had to pinpoint like one or two people that have really been an inspiration to you throughout your life, who would those individuals be?
I like to say there's certain people at certain levels in my life. Okay. that I gravitated towards. When I was younger, it was my karate instructor. You know, he pretty much was like that father figure that I was looking for. But once I got to the point where I felt like I lost that respect for him,
mm-hmm.
by nothing that he did, it was just that I felt like I had outgrown him.
Okay.
So I moved on. He could no longer be my role model because he could no longer handle me.
Mm-hmm.
So as I went on, you know, and then there was a gentleman in the Marine Corps, and I wrote a little bit about him in the very beginning. He was a disciplinarian, you know, he put the hammer down, and he was a much smaller guy. I could have grabbed him. I could have thumped the guy. I mean, but, you know, with the thought of being in the military, going through a court martial, the whole nine yards, you know, did I really want to put, you know, my military career on the line,
mm-hmm.
just to get my hands on someone because I had done something wrong, because I didn't want to listen, you know, because I wanted to be belligerent, you know. So those are the things that kept me respectful of him. Of course, when I left Japan, he left, you know, so you know, I needed other role models. I could say when I moved to Oldland, my father-in-law was a role model. I looked up to him because, you know, he had the respect of a lot of people in this community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he grew up here. He was well known. He had always been a family man. Like I said, he was respectful. And you know, because I didn't have a father figure, I could literally sit back and watch him and
okay.
emulate some of the things that he did. You know, and say, you know, this is the type of person I wanted to be. You know, I can't say I wanted to. You know, I watched Bill Cosby before the old Bill Cosby.
Right,
I
right.
watched him and pick up on some things, but I could watch my father-in-law and see those same qualities. You know,
mm-hmm.
he's a family guy. He loved the joke, but he, you know, if you crossed him, he would put the hammer down on his kids and let them know what was what. You know, and I loved that. You know, and I tried to emulate that as much as I could. And but as far as male figures, there haven't been that many in my life
okay.
where, you know, I've gravitated towards to, you know, majority of them have been women. And, you know, my grandmother was mm-hmm. the first and the one that I still hear the voices whenever I decide to do something. I'll hear it, you know better, don't do that, you know.
Right.
I still hear those voices. I mean, and it's been some years. She passed away in 88, so you know, those types of things, you know, we all need that guidance in our lives, you know, and you appreciate it. Those of us that are tough parents, you know, your kids will appreciate it later in life. They will come back and tell you, hey, I appreciate what you did, I appreciate you doing this, you know. They will remember those things you're telling them.
So I guess this is kind of, I don't know if it's kind of off topic or not, but the absence of role models throughout your life, has that kind of caused you to have more of a mindset of being a role model at this point?
You know,
even if it's inadvertently?
Because, you know, when you, a lot of the guys that I know that have grown without a father figure, all say the same thing. I want to be the father that my dad wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when it comes to those types of things, you know, I gravitate towards, you know, the younger, you know, princes and, you know, the young lion cubs. You know, I want to be that role model in their life to where they can look at me and they can say, you know what, I want to be just like him when I get older. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had the hard times, but they don't see that. They see this guy that has come from a checkered background, that has been able to prosper and make something of himself, You know, mm-hmm. I carry myself in public in a manner where, you know, when I'm at home and I'm in behind closed doors and I'm listening to my music, that's a totally different person than when I'm out in public and I'm driving down the street or when I'm walking through the door at Tim Hortons. You know, you're not going to see me carrying myself and, you know, being rude and disrespectful. Even when someone has gotten me to the level where they're argumentative or making me upset, I still try to keep my calm and some type of reserve because okay. I know that people are looking at me and they look up to me. Mm-hmm. So I want to show them, you know what, this is my way of, in essence, and I hate to say this because I'm not this type of guy, but turning the other cheek. That's my way of turning the other cheek mm-hmm. because I am definitely a Malcolm X, get right to you, you know, right. I believe in that, but, right. you know, there are times where you just got to learn to just relax, you know, it's not that bad. They don't have a bearing on you and your life, so you kind of excuse those things and move on.
Okay.
But yeah, I definitely hold myself in a high regard when it comes to being a role model for young kids.
Outstanding. So what can we expect next?
You know, I've thought of a couple of books, but they're more college oriented. I have thought about writing about Maslow's hierarchy of needs to try to correlate a lifestyle growing up in the hood okay. with his theory. I think if something of that nature, if you can correlate those two things together and put it in layman's terms, there would be a lot of people that would be interested in that topic. Mm. And it falls under psychology or sociology. So I think it's an interesting concept. I haven't seen any other books out there like it. But like I said, you know, that's something that I would do after I retire.
Okay.
I don't have any intentions on doing those long nights and long days of writing anymore. I would literally, when I was doing my degree, I would literally stop writing papers and write a story that I remember because it was fresh in my head, and then I would go back to doing my my work there. So, but I would like to do some more guest speaking. I've done some guest speaking at some local schools. I've hit BOCES and Cuba. Olean High School has avoided me, and Portville has avoided me, and I think they could use a voice like mine. You know, there's a lot of kids around here that could learn a little bit from me. You know, there's a lot of kids around here that like to use words that they probably shouldn't use, and you know, I just want to let them know. You know, mm-hmm. those types of things are unacceptable. If you go to a bigger city, you know, that just isn't going to work.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You have to be mindful of who you are and where you're at and be respectful to one another, you know. But that's a whole other conversation. But, yeah, I would love to do some more guest speaking, get out and talk to some younger kids and try to guide them in the right direction. Okay. I can say a couple of times I went and guest spoke. There's one kid that actually went and he was inspired by my words, by my book, and he actually graduated and joined the Marine Corps.
Awesome.
And, you know, I was completely happy with that. You know, I couldn't be more happier for the kid, you know, and I hope, I wish the best for him. And there's a few other kids that have heard about my journey and have joined the military in general. They use it as a stepping stone, like I did, you know, mm-hmm. to try to get a better life. And I also remember talking in Cuba, and all of the kids there wrote me a thank you letter.
Awesome.
And I really appreciated that. You know, it was heartwarming mm-hmm. to see that. But there was one letter that I got out of that bunch. I can't remember how many I received, but there was one letter, and I still have all of those letters too. There was one letter that I received where the individual they poured out and basically was saying thank you so much for talking. They were able to correlate to my life with the family abuse, the alcoholism, the death early in the family, to feeling like you're all alone in life, to have all of those negative thoughts and being in those negative elements. They were impressed by how I was able to get my life together. Mm-hmm. And they appreciated sharing that info. And, you know, that made me feel good. That was the whole purpose of what I wanted to do, you know.
And, yeah.
You know, and don't care what race you are, you know, for all races, for everyone, mm-hmm. you know, it's important that we get that type of message out to help, you know, our youth to understand that, you know, while you have a special circumstance or a different circumstance, you know, we've all experienced it in some type of way, and there are people out there that can help you to get over that, you know.
Definitely. Definitely, that's outstanding. Well, I am I'm putting the link to Amazon in the comments. It's a link to both the hardcover and the soft cover.
Yep.
So at least I thought I did.
I did not make that price. I'm just letting you know.
But I mean, they you know.
I do encourage that if anyone gets the e-book is the better deal. Yeah. And I have some books. My wife is chiming in. I have some books here.
Okay, that I keep awesome.
Here locally, and you're interested. I have some books here.
Outstanding. Let me see if I can tag your author page in the notes here. So that that link will be in the notes as well. Or notes, the comments. Listen to
yeah.
me. The comments of. You know, the video here, so people can go ahead and they can contact you through that as well. I really appreciate you share it. Definitely would like to have you on more for other topics as well. But you know, before we go, anything else you want to tell or let anybody know, anything else you want to say about the book, advice, anything?
Talk about the military a lot, and some people are for, some are against, but you know, I'm not saying it was the all being, but it was definitely a platform that helped me to overcome many obstacles. I can honestly say that if it wasn't for the military, I'd be dead right now. I know that for a fact. A lot of my friends that grew up with me that I might have mentioned in the stories in my book, majority of those guys are locked up right now. The rest of them are dead. So I'm an anomaly of our group. I'm the most successful of our group, and I definitely throw all of that on the Marine Corps and what they've done to me. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the life that I live, the ups and the downs, and hopefully I can help someone else. If I can help one or two, you know, then I'm doing what God intended for me to do. So
definitely.
That's the way I look at it.
Definitely. Well, I really appreciate it. You know, those of you that are watching or listening, you know, the Facebook page for Mr. Robinson, his author page, it's in the notes, so you can contact him through that and get your copy of the book. I'm enjoying my copy, like I said, and definitely want to encourage you to pick it up. It's definitely worth the read. It's very informative, and it'll give you a different perspective on things, not just with what Mr. Robinson went through, but just in general, your outlook on life. And, you know, like the title says, a change is going to come, because you see transitions through these stories and through these aspects of his life, you know, that have been encouraging for me. And like I said, I'm not even done with the book yet, so I'm excited to see how it continues. But Mr. Robinson, thank you so much for being a guest on the show here. We really appreciate it. You know, I appreciate your time and your transparency, definitely. So
yeah, thank you, and thank everyone that tuned in and that are watching it later. Appreciate it. Appreciate the love.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, we thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, you pray for me, I'll pray for you. We'll catch you next time on Reflections. Good night.